Strap yourself in and adjust your mirrors for maximum visibility. It's time for Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Now, I enjoyed the title of your email, or the selections. We're going for the best bass lines.
Yeah, I'm going for the most iconic, the ones that, I mean, I looked at a whole bunch of lists, but the ones that possibly within, you know, one or two bars, you're like, oh, yeah. Mm. So I guess there could be, you know, other lists of best bass players, or even sort of complicated bass lines, but this is sort of like iconic and recognizable, I guess, is sort of what we're going for here. But yeah, oh my gosh, amazing songs. And then I guess even more of a bummer, the ones we didn't pick, they're just all so awesome. So just a little background on the electric bass. It was invented in 1930, so wow, you know, I guess we'll have to be having birthday parties in a couple of years. And so previous to the electric bass, because electric bass is played horizontally like a guitar. So previous to that, you just had the big upright double bass, which is also a great sound. And, you know, and we should do a show on that as well. But so having it played horizontally like a guitar, having it have pickups and having it be electronic, the electric guitar was invented around the same time in 1930. So I guess we'll have to have double birthdays. And, you know, it changed music forever. It's foundational for, like, you know, rock and funk and punk, you know, just all of our pop music uses this electric bass.
Now, I don't know if this is what the reason or why this happened to be, but all of the songs we chose this morning are from the 70s.
I know, right? I was noticing that too. Now, I have seen multiple books written on this, so I'm trying to sort of summarize it in a quick time. There was a space in the 60s and 70s where there was the main four record companies had less of a hold on everything. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more independent labels. And so it happens to be like a bulge in diversity, but obviously how do you measure diversity? But I've seen a lot of academics try. So that there was sort of more diversity of in complexity of music at this time, because you had less dominance of those big sort of kind of, I think it's down to like three now that own like 90% of the pop music. Mm. So some people's theory would be that. I mean, it was also the era that funk was invented. You know, obviously the 60s were really experimental in many ways. So I guess, yeah, that just sort of reflected in the music. You know, now we have a lot more electronic, you know, synth basses and stuff like that. So definitely an era where people were still playing, you know, like instruments. So yeah, possibly like a lot of reasons, but like a really good question.
Mm. Now, what song are we going to start with this morning?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's start with Lou Reed, Walking the Wild Side. The bassist is Herbie Flowers, 1972. See, you already know what song it is.
So evocative.
Yeah. And apparently, weird story, he actually doubled it. He's playing an upright bass and doubled it with the electric bass. So, I mean, you're not hearing it. Like, it's not sticking it out, but that's how he's getting, I guess, such depth and complexity, because he's actually overlaid both. Now, here's a really complicated thing. So, when you copyright a song, all that's owned, I've literally been in court speaking for this before, all that's owned is the melody and the lyrics. And so this guy who played bass on this doesn't get songwriting credits.
Oh, man.
Because that's not the melody. You know, so you can't own the chords, but because obviously that'd be, you know, so many songs with the same chords. But yeah, so it's a weird thing about ownership in music. And the dude, he got 17 pounds for the session, and that's it. Now, he happens to have done like 20,000 sessions over his life and played for like David Bowie and Paul McCartney, so he's not crying. He's an amazing player, but you know, you just get paid for that session, and then that's it. You go home. And it's so, you know, the bass is so iconic in this. I mean, it's iconic for everything, you know, the lyrics, you know, the singing, and, you know, the stories that it's telling, that's all good. Oh, and Herbie Flowers died in 2024. He was 86 years old.
R.I.P. Take a walk on the wild. Yeah. Where, I mean, where does this song sit in the context of 1970s New York?
Oh, it's so important in that it described, you know, this wild side. It described this sort of underbelly of life and things that were happening. And those of you who know your music history, punk has such a weird history because, you know, there's British punk, which is sort of the sort of iconic, you know, tartan, spiky hair, three chord music punk. But there was this sort of different strain of it in America that was rebellious, but in more like an art house sort of different way. And this is definitely a part of that era, you know, very different than the other sort of pop music that was going on at the time. Jackie is just yeah, I mean, you know, we could probably, you know, do a whole show just on this song for an hour. So impactful.
Would you say a real era of social transformation happening in New York at that time?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, because this song even mentions, you know, drug use, sex work, trans people, you know. I was just writing a pop song. So, you know, it was really different. It's been a little scandalous because it uses the phrase colored girls. There's been different versions, different times that have taken that out. Other sorts of sexual references have been, apparently it was let through at the time because people didn't know what it meant. So, you know, yeah, it's actually sort of a dark, complex, interesting, almost like a documentary. And you can hear the bass, they're doing what's called glissando or portamento, which is that sort of slidey thing, which isn't often how, you know, we get our sort of rock and pop bass. Is more like plucked, or, you know, just a finger pump, right? Just a one note. But this gets that sort of slide.
Such a great song. Iconic.
Yeah.
Truly iconic. Yeah. Now, what is next? What's next on?
Okay, I guess we'll go in order. So we'll go in 1975. Lowrider again. This bass line, the band's called War. The band's probably not as known as the song is, but just listen to a few minutes of this bass, you'll know the song.
We got something. I mean, this is clearly sitting in the funk and Latin
absolutely
realm.
Yeah, you can hear the bass is syncopated. It's not on the beat. It's in between. It's in between the beat. It's so syncopated to have the bass playing in between the drum beat, and as phenomenal as the bass is, the cowbell's doing a good job of trying to steal the limelight as well. So you can hear the cowbell versus the bass.
This is one of those songs which I feel is sitting in like a real sort of cultural storytelling zone. You know, this is like the Latin community and you know, the sort of stuff that they've got going on.
Well, absolutely. The car culture, lowriders, they were called. They would take these classic cars and, you know, I'm no mechanic, do fancy stuff to them so that they bounce and, you know, put the hydraulic things in them. And, of course, also pink leopard seats and fluffy dice. And, like, it's this huge thing of playing with cars. And, yeah, so this song's literally Lowrider. So it's really capturing this California Mexican culture that are different than Mexico Mexicans, and you know, it's a very unique sort of culture that's at this crossroads. You know, oh my gosh, they're still talking about immigration today in America. You know, because there's a border with Mexico, and before colonization, the people were just there. You know, and a lot of Mexicans you know, there's a lot of indigenous folks there and people mixed. And so, yeah, this whole border culture, what is California? California used to be Mexico. They sold it through a deal to the state, so, you know, so it's this whole complicated area. And then, yeah, you get 1970s lowrider car culture. And so the guy's name is Dickerson, the player. And, oh, some of the things I read about the song, they called the Progressive Soul, which I have not heard before, so maybe that will have to get its own show. Progressive Soul.
You know, with the bass, you kind of often, you know, think about dance and stuff like this, but I think that particular bass line is one that puts you in more of a trance than anything.
Interesting. That's a really interesting response. You know, anyone wants to just, like, knock you out, they just play that, and you're like, yeah, boom, in a trance. That's great.
Also, there's been a few texts coming through saying, yes, this very Cheech and Chong, that tune. So Cheech and Chong.
Oh, hells yes.
Dazed and Confused as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Cheech and Chong are so funny. So, like, Cheech was representing for the Mexican Americans, but Chong is Asian. It was so funny to have this Asian stoner on this comedy team. Now, I want to mention some runner-ups that were not playing today, like Michael Jackson's Billie Jean, Queen and David Bowie, Under Pressure, White Stripes, Seven Nation Army, lots of stuff by the Chili Peppers. Anything by Sly and the Family Stone and James Brown. But, you know, just these ones, these tracks where you play, you know, a bar or two and you're like, oh, yeah. And also just shout out the bass. You can play sort of hammered on the frets and like the glissandos like we've heard. You can play chords. I find them a bit muddy. But just, you know, kind of a simple instrument, but the players have just, like, taken it to its extreme and using all parts of the neck and the body and, you know, pitching it and the pickups and everything, you know, really cool.
Now we've got one more tune.
Yep. So this is iconic as well. There you go.
Are we at the very end of the 70s now?
I don't know if this is the right song.
Oh, is it Chic? I Want Your Love?
Yeah.
Is that what we're after?
No, Good Times.
Oh, Good Times. Ah, what have I done? Hang on. I can fix this.
Ooh. Well, yeah, so like you said, end of the 70s, 69, this song, most iconic bass line. There you go. The nexus between, you found it. Nexus between disco and hip hop. You know, people say disco is short-lived, that it died, but it's still alive and hip-hop. But you know how you said that last bass line put you in a trance? This bass line is telling you a whole darn story. You know, it's just walking around and doing things.
So like you mentioned, this is very foundational and widely sampled in hip hop and dance music. Why do you think this one in particular is, you know,
sampled, like, sampled so much? I don't know. I feel it's just, to me, it's so lively. It moves around a lot. Often the bass will just ground you and play the chords. You know, bass players out there, especially if you're a beginner, you know, you're just playing G, 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 C, 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 you know, and it grounds the whole band and it's great. You know, I'm not saying you have to. But this one doesn't do that. This one's playing a whole tune itself. You know, somehow it's not distracting from the melody, but it's able to sort of move around and be doing all these things. You know, it's so different than the standard bass lines. You see, there's a bit of portmanteau, but a little tiny bit of slapping and sort of covering a lot of the, you know, the capabilities. I know some of you are going to start rapping over it.
Just can't wait. The clock keeps turning. Why hesitate?
So it's quite complex, but it's not messy.
On the idea of the bass doing some cultural storytelling, what story is it telling in this song?
Wow. I mean, this is actually, the song's actually about roller skating. So even though it's,
yes,
it's a disco song, it's sort of about this chill era of, you know, you go round and round and round on the roller rink, you know, with the disco light, you know? And so, you know, it's the same good times because the roller rink is a little, you know, it's a little more family than the than the nightclub. You know, the nightclub, you're getting the whole drug scene. In the 70s, it was, you know, it was pretty out there. So this is sort of taking disco more to the family. Oh, look. Okay, they've stripped back everything to the baseline, which meant this is where the rappers could grab it. So it's like they absolutely invited you to rap over the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what you hear is not a test. Sorry, it's just so tempting. And that was the thing with disco too, is it would make these long mixes, and it would make it so that DJs could do fancy things, but also, yeah, then rappers could start coming in over the top of it. But listen, you've got orchestra stabs. You know, what a weird mixture to have some strings top of this super funky bass. I don't know how his fingers are doing this.
Do you think there's any symbolic meaning of, like, these super low frequency sounds in a particular musical space?
Well, yeah, there's like court cases about it. It was because, you know, people, that's why people thought rock and roll was kind of, you know, the devil's music, that it stimulated people physiologically and the urges. And part of it was because that rumbling bass line, you can feel vibrating in your body. You know, I guess different than other instruments, you know, you can enjoy strings, right? You can enjoy saxophone. But these low frequencies, you know, some people believe, you know, could, you know, they hum and vibrate in your body, and some people think they could cause lasciviousness. So, like, yeah, absolutely, people, you know, were worried that it caused it. I mean, I love the, this is my favorite instrument. I don't know it's because it's so lascivious, but yeah, definitely this sort of possible physiological response that it causes in you.
So good, so good.
Now, I'm not, you know, people that are actually into sound would know how to, like, you know, how do you put it through your amplifiers? How do you put it on speakers? How do you get it low enough that you can get the floor vibrating, but that you're not getting, like, feedback and stuff? So I would imagine, you know, sound people would be really important, especially, you know, the size of the venues and the size of the speakers. How to have the bass really still get that rumble, you know, without being messy and muddy. Don't even recording it, you know, because you're going to have it played on little tiny speakers in your ear. But how to still get that depth.
Well, Kirsten Zemke, should we turn this up and let the good times roll?
Yeah, take it out.
And
all right.
Thank you so much for Traveling Tunes. Yeah, we'll see you next Friday.
All right, bye.
That was Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.